Techno Progressivo. You are listening to Techno Progressivo on 101.9 CITR in Vancouver.
Welcome to Techno Progressivo. I'm DJ Waugh, and you're listening to 101.9 CITR here in Vancouver. I've got an excellent interview feature on tap for you this evening with Toronto's Nathan Barrato ahead of his gig here in town next Friday, and we will get to that shortly, but first let's check out this episode's track of the week. Kediyov shows off some serious percussion here. This is FT 130 BPM. Okay, a great track of the week there. That was Kediyov's FT 130 BPM. That's out now on Running Back Records and can be had wherever you buy your music. Toronto's Nathan Barrato is a legend, pure and simple. I was fortunate to be able to interview him a few weeks back ahead of his Elements event at Industrial 236 next Friday, May 2nd. Here we discuss teamwork, a new direction for Rawthentic, and the art of DJing. The lead track here is his remix of Bassline Soldiers. Full track list and a selection of Nathan Barrato web links can be found on Techno Progressivo's socials. This is DJ Waugh speaking to Toronto's Nathan Barrato, an absolute legend of the scene with 20 plus years of DJing and productions under his belt. He's held down residencies at Toronto's Government, Stereo, and Footwork. Globally, he's played all over the States, Europe, South America, and on and on. He's featured on BBC's Essential Mix and, from a production standpoint, has created multiple sample packs including Bake Beats Volume 1, Barrato Bounce, and one for Tool Room Academy. His label Rawthentic, a collaboration with Carlo Leo, celebrates its 20th anniversary this year. One Spliff is his latest release, which dropped in late March and is available wherever you buy your tracks. He'll be here in Vancouver at Industrial Garden on Friday, May 2nd, and tickets for that are still available online. It's my pleasure to be speaking to him. This is Nathan Barrato. And kicking things off here, how do you define your sound, and would you say it's evolved or shifted over time?
It's moved around a lot, and over the years, like, I started out playing open format. Like, it wasn't called open format back then. It was like you just played. I was playing high school parties, so I was playing like slow jams, house. You know, I took that into actually working at a record store, and slowly but surely ended up in clubs, and I was playing hip hop at clubs. You know, it's a little bit of top 40. It's kind of like learning how to DJ in a big club in a big sound system, and, you know, slowly getting closer to playing like what I had the most passion for at the time, which was like straight up house music, a lot of soulful house music, like, you know, New York in late 90s. New York heavily influenced me from like a soulful garage standpoint. And that, you know, transitioned as I started to party myself. I started to go to, you know, really important clubs. clubs here in Toronto, one called Industry. I kind of tend to want to say like that's where I was born. I was born at Industry. So I started to change and started to understand techno and just like really sort of move around with my sound and based on what I was kind of living in the influence. And that was like the foundation for the rest of my sort of dance music career, where I just realized that I really love a lot of different sounds. So when you hear me play like my truest self, you'll hear me kind of go all over the board inside, you know, a short amount of time, from, you know, techno to soulful house, or sometimes I'm merging both. And obviously I love a lot of tech house records. I was really into when tech house was kind of forming, like in the early 2000s or so, you know, like Peace Division, John Chiafoni, just in that era. And I still play a lot of those records today. So my sound, I really see it as sort of like an amalgamation of a lot of my influences.
Okay, you touched on this a little bit there. When you think way back to the beginning of discovering this kind of music for you, what are a couple of tracks that really stand out as influences for you from that period of time?
You know, it's hard for me to pinpoint a song, because the whole time I was doing Top 40 Hip Hop, it wasn't that I was not into house at the time. That was alongside. Like in those days, I worked at the record store, so I was buying, playing everything. Drum and bass, techno, vocal house. I'd buy like the newest Mariah Carey, you know, like I was buying everything that I liked and across the board. But the gigs I was getting, because I was working with a couple of friends who had these gigs, it wasn't exactly like my ideal music to play, but it was just an opportunity to learn. And like I said, learning how to play on a big club system is quite impactful, because you're controlling 1,000 people. You're still kind of having this impact on the way they have their night. And the sound was really hard for me to learn how to play with all this vibration all around. Like I was surrounded by so much powerful sound. It was kind of wild. But what made me change to just stop gigging like that was because I worked at the record store, I had all these upcoming upfront music, promos, unreleased, and I was always trying to play it for the crowd. Like I remember I had like this brand new Jay-Z unreleased white label promo. I got it direct from the label. Like, you know, these are vinyl days, right? You couldn't hear this anywhere else. And I'm like thinking, oh, I can't wait to play this. The crowd's gonna go crazy. Like, this is gonna be the next record. They're gonna be singing this, non, you know? And sure enough, I play it and the reaction was really weak. What turned me off was they just wanted to only hear the songs they knew from the radio that they've heard 100 times all day at work. It was the same songs over and over, and I just got really turned off. And I wanted to just play music to crowds that wanted to like kind of be expressed to.
Okay, and how was that transition from being a top 40 and hip hop DJ into being a house DJ strictly? Did that all happen kind of smoothly, or were there bumps along the way?
Yeah, I don't recall any issues really, you know, because I think possibly there's nothing glaring in my memory. But I mean, while I was doing those gigs, which were really for some experience and some money, I was going out after, you know, so, and I was going to the clubs where it was like industry, you know, it was Derek Carter, Mario J, Mark Farina, you know, Basement Jacks would play there. Like it was any of the top like underground artists from around the world and locally were playing at industry pretty much and Comfort Zone. And I was partying at those clubs. So when I started gigging at Comfort Zone, I felt really comfortable because I was already going there. I always find that a lot of the DJs, the new DJs that had been partying prior, really picked up DJing quickly because they knew kind of like what to do, how to react, how to move the crowd. So it was a pretty smooth transition, totally.
Okay, retrospective time here. Can you think of from when you started out to now, how has the Toronto club scene changed over that period of time?
I mean, there's been all kinds of different sort of changes. I'm just thinking like, you know, in a lot of those days, a little bit before industry, but still around those days, there was a lot of booze cans where, you know, just after hours, illegal parties that were happening at random venues and spaces. And a lot of what, like the best vibe and music were happening at those parties. That was my experience, you know, in like the gay scene, there was parties were amazing. The crowds were dope. Like that was where you caught like the freshest music and the coolest crowd because it wasn't so like segregated as it kind of eventually became. And then it started, the clubbing scene really blew up and we had this really insane run of nightclubs in a very short span of city blocks where it was like maybe three or four blocks, like in kind of like a square of so many clubs. And it was really just overboard and it got crazy. You know, the drinking hour ends at 2:00. And so all these clubs would just spill onto the streets and there were fights in the street. It just got a little nasty. So that transitioned out of that, you know, and there was always just like residents, basically they were building like resident type properties among all the club in the club areas. And that pushed a lot of venues out. There was a lot of noise complaints. And I've always found that Toronto had like a little bit of a venue problem where it was just sort of like trying to find a venue that is not pissing off some resident, which is understandable. Like if you live somewhere, you don't want to be getting hit with pounding noise, but it just seemed like the city never really gave the clubbing industry love. Like they were just like, oh, you got a club? Oh, well, we're going to build a condo right next door to you. And all those residents are going to complain and you're going to have to move. You know, people, a lot of club owners spend just insane amounts of money to operate and be there. And then, you know, their business is just like forced out. I have found had created like a problem in the city where we always had this really healthy crowd and a lot of people that came out, but the venues were a challenge. And to me, I think that still kind of rings true. We have a lot of venues and we have a smaller percentage of really good venues, in my opinion.
This is DJ Linus.
This is Andy Clockwork.
This is DJ Leanne.
This is Ian Howie.
Hey, what's up? This is Sid, and you're listening to Techno Progressivo.
Lose myself.
Okay, let's move over to production here. Given the duration of time that you've been doing this, what is the DAW that you use for your productions? And has it always been the same since you started out?
It's pretty much always been the same. I'm an Ableton Live user. I've used Logic like just a short amount. A lot of the guys that I was kind of in being influenced by and growing up watching, they were all on Logic pretty much. So I was always intrigued to learn Logic, but and just couldn't really get out of Ableton. I was just enjoying Ableton so much that I just never bothered to get out of Ableton. About a year or two ago, I got really interested in basically just trying to get off the computer and just using my hands more than just like staring at a screen with my mouse. You know what I mean? And just trying to like, it might sound a little weird, but like move my body in the studio. Like there's a keyboard over there, stand up to the drum machine. Like just a little bit of I just thought it might be something that would change me a little bit in the way I work. And I really got into it. And now I wouldn't say fully off the computer. I kind of have a hybrid setup.
Okay, and then just another question about those. Are those the same videos you're posting on your Instagram page where you're using hardware like MPCs and things like that?
Yeah, exactly. That was part of what got me a little more dedicated into trying to figure out these devices. Because I wanted to sort of have a little more of a presence on Instagram, and it's not really in my nature to want to have a camera on me. You know, like a lot of people, it's not the most comfortable thing to do. But I wanted to just show my music in a different way, and I didn't want to just have a camera on me while I'm clicking on a mouse staring at a screen. So I just really put in some time into MPC and grew to love it, and found that it was fun to make these videos that I post, and it seems that people enjoy it, and it's cool to do something you enjoy that people also enjoy. So it just kind of started a rabbit hole of I'm just diving deeper and deeper into it.
Okay, I want to touch on those sample packs. How much time and effort goes into creating one of those, and what's the whole process of making them?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of it is pretty much all the sounds are created digitally. I mean, I will, you know, I'll sometimes rent a synth, and we have Long McQuaid here in Toronto. It's a great, great company that you can just rent. There's so many options that you can just rent something for like a week, which is, it seems unheard of. Whenever I tell my buddies that aren't from Toronto, when I tell them I rented a Moog, they're like, what? What do you mean? Dean rented a Moog. Like, it's like a $2,000 unit that I can rent for like $40. And I bring it in the studio and I record the shit out of it. And I make sounds, I create sounds and, you know, play with different sort of settings and just stack up a whole bunch of sounds. And then I process them a lot in Ableton. And, you know, like right now I'm borrowing a drum machine from my friend. He wasn't using it. I thought it would have fun to just mess around with it. And I'm going to make a sample pack from it. And I don't know if I'll release it, but I'm going to have, you know, recorded sounds from it. So yeah, there's a whole many different ways that you could do it. You know, you can create it from like initialized patches in a synth where you're just creating sounds from blending tones together. Yeah, that's kind of like, a rough way to explain it. We actually sell a lot of sample packs on a company called Sample Market under our label Rauthentic. I make a bunch of those packs. Carlos made a few packs too. And there's the ones that you mentioned. I've actually started releasing packs independently as well, just out of interest, like putting it out kind of like to my Instagram followers, kind of just trying out different ideas of releasing. But yeah, so it's been cool, fun experience.
Discorder, that free magazine from CITR, has been documenting the best in music, arts, and culture since 1983. Let's see what one man of prestige has to say about Discorder.
What up, though? This is Big Snoop Dogg, and I fucks with Discorder magazine. How about that?
Smoke weed every day. Pick up a copy around Vancouver or f*** with Discorder online at discorder.ca.
Without the help and support of our friends, we here at CITR wouldn't be able to bring you all the great music, art, cinema, and culture that you love. Thanks to the long-standing support from the Rio Theatre, we are able to keep you informed on all the great artists, films, and everything else coming to town there. For all the current information about who and what's playing at the Rio Theatre, visit their website at www.riotheatre.ca.
You are listening to the Nathan Barrato interview here on Techno Progressivo. I'm DJ Waugh and the station is 101.9 CITR. That half of the interview wrapped up with a newer one called Fine Day. Full track list and a selection of Nathan Barrato web links can be found on Techno Progressivo socials. Part 2 kicks off with one called Hands Trippy. Okay, with Rauthentic having its 20th year anniversary this year, what are some things you're proud of with the label and things that you still hope to achieve?
Yeah, you know, it's an interesting story with the label because it was initially started by me and my my brother. That was in 05, and it was just us. And then, you know, not long after that, I actually got to meet Carlo, and that's a whole nother cool story. But alongside our own story as DJs, he's a producer from Toronto that I was, you know, hearing, and he was new to me, and I wanted to release one of his tracks. And, you know, we didn't have the elements. I think he had lost the elements of the track. So we had to go create elements of this track, or like recreate the vocal. And we were like trying to sync together, and we just kind of built this bond. And I just really always had a lot of belief in him. And we got along really well. Even from when our first times DJing together, it was just like a crazy connection, literally from the first gig. And I just invited him to join us. And we ran that together for 4 years together. And then I took a break from music, actually, from the music business altogether. I basically cut out of everything for about 5 years. And while I did that, Carlo kept going with Rawthentic. And then I forget why or what had happened, but he didn't like dissolve the label. He just kind of stopped releasing. And then I ended up back in the music business, and he had already built this incredible international career while I was out of music. We stayed best friends. And then I got back into it, and I built my own international career. And then about, what, like 5 years after me touring and him and I gigging together again, but now we're like gigging in other cities, we basically were like, why don't we just revive Raw, you know? And we started back up in 2019. And we've been rolling together through that, through COVID, which was a journey in itself. It was pretty hard, but cool experience up till now. And yeah, we're really excited about our future. You know, we just partnered up with Tool Room. They're going to handle our label operations and management. And we're really excited to work with them. They're friends and they're good guys. And we are excited to just basically level up and get a little more prominent in all the platforms, you know, and not just really cater to the DJ market. That's generally what we think, but you know, we need to kind of level up our delivery to the different platforms that are out there and level up some marketing. And we want to make a big push for events and eventually have, you know, stages at festivals, Rawthentic and merch, and continue on our sample market process.
Okay, I wanted to ask you a couple questions about DJing here. How do you approach programming a set? What's your preferred setup of choice? And what do you think makes your set stand out?
I like that you even said programming a set. I haven't heard that term used much since mid-90s because we used to always talk about programming. I was really lucky. Like, one of the guys that really had a massive influence on me is this guy from Toronto, this amazing DJ, Tyrone Solomon. And he always talked about programming. His style was like, a lot of DJs, their programming doesn't exist. Like, they're basically just, it's like bomb after bomb after bomb after bomb after bomb, right? Which is totally fine. I'm not even judging that in any way, but that's not really programming per se. Whereas with Tyrone, he really imparted this like kind of storytelling kind of process in me. So, you know, the way I approach it, I don't really generally like know the story I'm going to tell. That's the thing. I'm basically like, I don't really approach it with like knowing the story I'm going to tell. Like, I really love to wing it. And basically I still structure my music in a way where it's similar to how I had a record box back in the day with records. You know, before you go to your gig, you're really excited for your gig. You're going to play a comfort zone, or maybe like the one time I got to play at Industry, you know, I'm going nuts imagining what's that gig going to be like. You can't stop thinking about it for weeks, you know, and finally the day comes and you got to like pick your records because what you got on you is all you can play, right? And that's what you got. And you have to just wing it in the moment and see what works and what doesn't. You know, I don't want to plan a set because I'm not going to do a good job, as good of a job planning a set as I would reacting to the energy that's going back and forth between, you know, me and the crowd. Or I think that's how every DJ should approach their sets. For me, it's really like kind of a truest form of DJing, which is really reactive to the people. It's like we're playing tennis, you know, I throw them the ball, they pass it back, and we're just going back and forth, and I have to be able to react. And to me, that's kind of where the story goes. And at times, they're just kind of like, they just give it to me. They're like, take me there. And you can just direct the flow. It's really cool. And sometimes you have to be available to just kind of like let them direct you. It's really interesting. I love it.
Tell you, get out of here. See, it goes like this. Doing making love, the girl tell me to come. Says she want the daughter cause she already have the son. And if I don't come quick, I can't forget it. So I'm a draw from a jinxing and I take one sip. Should I see me just a gallop like a horse, I get whipped. Come quick, whoa. She said you are love and not another, although some men change. But I know you will never. She give me love, 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 love you forever.
Okay, let's talk about your gigging history. This might be a bit challenging if you want to narrow it down to the past year or even a bigger timeline than that. What are some standout gigs that you've had and what made them so special for you?
It's really weird. Very often, you know, we get questions like this, and I say we because it's a lot of times me and Carlo went through a lot of these processes together, and we would be like in Ibiza and someone will ask us that and we both just want to be like, yeah, like comfort zone. You know, we'll want to reference like these incredible moments that we had at Comfort Zone in Toronto. I mean, I've been really lucky and I've had a lot of really cool experiences that it's hard for me to just kind of pinpoint one. You know, I definitely want to say, like, you know, different moments of playing Elro in Barcelona was pretty incredible, being able to do that. There was a gig that I played in Lebanon, like on the side of a mountain, this crazy venue, and like I never ever will forget the vibe of the people. They just, it felt like this might sound crazy, but like you'll play a gig in like Waterloo and the vibe is so good, and it's like maybe they just don't get parties much, so then when you go there they're just extra hyped up. And Lebanon was like that kind of energy, but like times 10. That was really, really memorable. Other than like kind of my first ever Ibiza gig, it was kind of a bad experience. I had a lot of technical issues and I could never recover. And like you asked me, memorable gig, and that was the first thing that came to mind, but that was not a positive experience. But it was still an important experience all the same, you know?
Move me, rock me. Patina feels like dirt in a boat.
Dave Dresden from Gabriel and Dresden.
This is Nala.
Hey, this is Lubelski.
This is Niels Hoffman.
Hi, this is Mark Knight, and you're checking out Techno Progressivo.
Patina feels like dirt in a boat.
Okay, can you think of one producer you've worked with who's really helped you up your game, and how did that happen?
I mean, it's Carlo. Like, it's Carlo. He's the one that I've worked with the most. You know, we're partners in everything. And I learned a lot from just working alongside him, you know, and the way he works. Like, to me, he's the king of, like, having an ear. It's just, like, sometimes you'll look at his... I'll be, like, working with him. We're working on something. I'll look at his, like, project. And I can't really make sense of what I'm seeing because of the way we have different languages in a way, in the way that we work on our own. And I don't really get what I see on the screen, but what I hear ear is really good, and he's got this perfect ear. And I don't know, sometimes that's a little bit of an odd kind of thing to mention, because I don't know how many people really understand what that means, but some people work really hard, work a lot, have a lot of passion and heart, but they just don't have the ear. And he has the ear. Like, he just gets it. There's something tuned in his brain where the guy just gets it. And so I learned a lot about him, I think, or learned a lot from him. And I think a lot of it was just from, like, just kind of going with the flow while you're creating. It's like, I hadn't really analyzed why he would be so influential to me, you know, but thinking about it now, a lot of it is just like how he's just moving while he creates. He's just kind of trying this, okay, go, you know, he's not overthinking, I think. And I think that was a really big influence on me.
Hey, at this stage of your career, is there anything that you consider uncharted territory for you and other things that you want to accomplish?
I mean, I'm interested in songwriting and making songs that are not only for the club. I've been interested in that for quite a long time now and working at it here and there. And I want to explore it more. I think it would be really interesting to do that. I would love to write like a song that lives on the radio.
And then the final question for you here, is there anything that you want to promote right now?
Yeah, I'm doing like a really fun gig in Vancouver on the 2nd of May. I played with this crew before. They're called The Initiative, and it was super fun. They're really good guys. I really liked kind of just talking to them and hanging with them, partying with them, and playing music to the people. And this time I get to do it with Carlo side by side. It's going to be a wicked night. And yeah, actually the next night I'm going to be in Victoria too, on the 3rd at Downbeat, the new club there. And that's with Greg Gao and Mark. I can't wait. It's going to be a great night, a whole cool weekend. I get a little bit of a BC weekend, so it's going to be dope. I haven't been out there in a while.
this has been Nathan Barrado. A selection of his tracks can be found on Beatport, Apple Music, Spotify, Juno Download, and Bandcamp. As well, a full list of his web links can be found on Techno Progressivo's socials. Remember to check him out at Industrial Garden here in Vancouver on Friday, May 2nd, and tickets for that are still available online. Thank you very much for doing this.
A stack of records here, a stack of records there. I got records scattered all over everywhere, but I'm looking.
Discorder Magazine has been supporting independent music for over 30 years, and it keeps on living by joining efforts with local music supporters such as Vinyl Records. You can find a selection of Vinyl Records' featured albums on the back cover of Discorder and can support your favorite local bands and artists by purchasing their records. For more information on their vast selection of new, used, and rare music, go to vinylrecords.ca.
We are all done for another episode of Techno Progressivo. Thank you so much to Nathan Barrado for agreeing to interview. It was a pleasure, and this definitely was a bucket list interview for me. He's had a massive impact on the scene, both domestically and internationally. That segment wrapped up with his latest, One Spliff. Full track list and a selection of Nathan Barrado web links can be found at Techno Progressivo's socials. If you like what you heard, remember to check him out at Industrial 236 next Friday, May the 2nd, and tickets for that can still be had online. If you've enjoyed the show and want to hear it again, visit the Techno Progressivo show page at CITR.ca or Apple Podcasts. To give this one another spin or to hear more great guest mixes and interviews from days gone by, keep up to date with Techno Progressivo. Follow our socials, Facebook, Instagram, and SoundCloud. Attic Jams is up next on the station. Stick around to see what they've got in store for you tonight. Before we go, let's do as we always do and set the controls in the time machine for this episode's track from the past. For this one, let's hop back 15 years to 2010 for a classic from Tom Flynn. It's Miami Lanza. Enjoy it, and I'll see you back here next time.